Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hey, everyone. It's Asten Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
It could get menacing, frightening, find help. Sometimes I scare myself.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your on-demand cover art meme generator of music news and criticism. I'm your host for the week, Joe Coscarelli.
Tweaking off that 2CB, huh? Is he gonna make it TBD, huh? Thought I was gonna run DMC, huh? I done died and lived again on DMT, huh? See, this the type of high that won't come down. This the type of high that get you gunned down. Easy trolling OD, huh? Turn TMZ to smack DVD, huh? Russell Simmons wanna pray for me too. I'ma pray for him cause he got me too. Thinking what if that happened to me too? Then I'm on E News.
Shit could get menacing, frightening, find help. Sometimes I scare myself.
Shit could yikes. Get Yikes. That's one of the first words that comes to mind after the past few days of Kanye West. I am hosting the podcast this week because our man in the woods, John Caramonica, he is still on the road, but he is joining us by phone because we could not do this without him. Hey, John, how are you?
I wanted to say undisclosed location, but I just feel like I'm just going to be honest about where I am, right. Which is in a hotel room in Billings, Montana, which is obviously where else would you go to decompress from the Kanye West Wyoming experience but to a hotel in Billings, Montana?
Right, from one mountain to another.
Yeah, so my real question is, Montana, you up? Like, what's really good? Someone at me.
Yeah, well, Yelp recommendations forthcoming. Depending on how fast we turn around this podcast, which right. is being recorded on Monday evening for our listeners. Joining us also, chief pop critic of the New York Times, John Pareles.
I'm here.
You're here in the flesh. Neither of us went to Wyoming. John took that.
He had all the fun.
Yes. Well, I was going
to
say he took the bullet.
You were about to say.
I was going to say you took the bullet. It's like a chartered jet with, you know, a few dozen of our closest and not so close colleagues and influencers. When did you get on that flight, John? Why don't you want to take us through your travel itinerary?
So I would love to. And so there were multiple flights, right? So there are multiple flights. They all flew out of New York early Thursday. And for you journalism ethics fans in the room, yes, obviously the New York Times is reimbursing for the seat.
Right. We don't take the PJ flights that are offered to us.
Right. We reimburse for any, you know, it's like Air Force One. You travel on Air Force One, you know, you get the New York Times gets a bill and we pay the bill. However, I'm pretty sure most of the people who are on these planes they're not reimbursing. But, you know, that's another thing.
Yeah, media watchdogs out there, if you want to interview every journalist who went to the Kanye West listening party in Wyoming and ask if they took the free flight or not, I would read that blog post.
I would read that blog post as well. I know personally who reimbursed and who didn't. So not only will I read that blog post, but I can also verify.
Yeah, so you'll be the deep throat of this investigation.
Right. So Thursday morning comes, hop on the plane, land in beautiful Jackson, Wyoming, where there are mountains all around you. And then everybody was ferried to various hotels around town. And then from those hotels, subsequently to the Diamond Cross Ranch, which is in a town called Moran or Morin, Wyoming. From what I can tell, Googling around online, it looks like it's the type of venue that people typically have mountain-themed weddings at, or other kinds of rural rustic events.
Sure.
For this purpose, it was transformed into a bonfire. You guys have all seen the pictures. Shouts to Ryan Dorgan, who's the local photographer who had the assignment to shoot the event for us.
Great photos.
Very beautiful photos. So we arrive there. There is sort of an outdoor portion and an indoor portion inside of, I guess it's a barn, like a large barn.
Right. For different purposes than maybe what it was originally built.
Yes. I mean, if the horses ever were in that barn, they were definitely not in that barn on that night. There were horses, as I mentioned in my piece, off in the distance, who seemed to not care about what was going on the ranch itself.
Right. They do not know who Virgil Abloh is.
No, it was muddy. I don't know if it had rained recently, but it was definitely muddy. I was really stressed about my sneakers. And also really relieved that I wore good sneakers, but I didn't wear like the A+ game. And I was really relieved that I didn't wear the A+.
Because you might have had to hop on a horse or something. Like who knows what this was going to
be? You say that in jest, and yet I might have hopped on a horse or just a tall person. Just anyone who could carry me around over those puddles. So we all get there at around 7:30-ish local time, maybe 8 o'clock.
So that's like,
I don't know, a long bus ride.
Like 9:30 or 10 p.m. East Coast time.
And you got up early in the morning.
It was a long day.
It was a long day. Yeah. Oh, it was undoubtedly a long day.
And I just want to pull back for a second and say, people watching this, you know, you see that there's journalists on a plane. You see that there's influencers. Maybe you think that they have more information than you do about what is going to happen here. And I think it's safe to say that in this case, they did not. You knew maybe that you were going to listen to new Kanye West music. You didn't know what the album was called. You didn't know necessarily when the album was coming out. You didn't even know what time press play was going to happen on this, what became a live stream on an app that I'd never heard of before, 2 hours before it started. So that's fair to say that you didn't really know what you were getting into?
No, it was undoubtedly the case. You know, I like to think that I have a reasonable amount of insight into these things, and I basically still just got on the plane with like the bare minimum of information. And I think it's interesting to hear the word influencer come up a lot.
Sorry, you know, it's just the best catch-all term.
No, I'm not disputing it. I just think it's funny because let's think about who's at this event, right? There are celebrities like, you know, Chris Rock is there and Jonah Hill is there and obviously musicians, Nas and Kid Cudi and so on and so forth. Like, and then there are people who are in the media, and then there are people who just for whatever reason were able to get on a plane to go to Wyoming on basically 24 to 48 hours notice. So is that influencing? I'm not totally sure if that's influencing. It's something, but I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's exactly that thing.
Well, John, what was the other demographic besides media and musicians? Was it fashion people? Was it sports people? Who was it?
It was fashion people. It was just like young, cool New York kids, young, cool LA kids, just, you know, like a lot of randos. And then there were also people from like streaming services. Like there were some, you'll forgive me for saying it, like there were just some squares. Who knows? You know, who knows? I didn't engage in extended dialogue with them, but like they work for some kind of corporation that is connected with the distribution of music.
Formerly known as radio programmers.
Right. But actually, and also radio programmers were there. And I actually thought that was the most revealing thing. At the hotel that I was at, I saw a couple people wearing jackets from the Beat 92.3. That's the LA radio station, I'm pretty sure, that Big Boy hosts on. And from what I understood, there were quite a few radio programmers there. And considering what Kanye told Charlemagne about the reception to Pablo and about how he was upset that didn't get on radio, I thought it was revealing that he made a real effort to have radio programmers come out to this. I mean, this is, JP, I mean, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the 70s and 80s here, because I feel like this felt to me a little bit like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, this sounds like a classic junket.
Yes, it was in that regard.
But, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, there was not one fashion blogger at these things.
It was better dressed. It was better dressed than most junkets. But, you know, obviously, look, we don't take junkets at the Times. But I would say, generally speaking, junket culture has gone away in the last 10 years.
Along with budgets, recording budgets and promotion budgets.
So that's why this, in a certain sense, felt really anachronistic to me. Because I was like, oh, people don't do things like this anymore. Even if you frame it, the only sort of equivalent thing, and this is something our editor, Karen Gans, mentioned in the newsletter last week, maybe the Rihanna plane from a few years ago.
Right. So this was Rihanna plane-esque, but not as much of a time commitment.
And today, as always, free the Rihanna 100.
Right. So Thursday night, you know, this is where I got a little frustrated because I felt like I should have known that this live stream was not going to start until after the NBA Finals game ended. So I was trying to do both, just trying to multitask. Then the game goes into overtime. You know, I'm still looking at a fire crackling with horses in the distance. And I just, you know, I just should have planned my night a little better. I should have known that these two things were not going to overlap because everybody wants to see the NBA Finals. This was game one. It was in overtime. So then, you know, you have 2 seconds left in the game and they're sort of sorting out a mess on the court. But the game is pretty much over. And then you see people start to gather around this fire. Right. So you don't get any Kanye, basically. You don't get any Chris Rock, really, until LeBron has been soundly defeated.
So yes, but obviously the energy in Wyoming, in the actual place, was different than what you're seeing on the stream.
Right. So while as we're tearing our hair out watching J.R. Smith dribble in the wrong direction, what were you experiencing?
Okay, so like I was saying before, there is an indoor and an outdoor portion of what was going on at the thing. And so while you guys are watching the basically Yule log of live streams, of Kanye album live streams, almost everybody was inside the barn. Kanye was there. Kim was there. 2 Chainz was there. Like, shouts to 2 Chainz, who cut me in the bathroom line. Literally walked up to me. I was not just me. It was a bunch of us. Literally walked up and said, I believe this is size order, and then went in the bathroom. So, salute to 2 Chainz. very legendary maneuver. So all of those people were milling around inside. And then you saw, like, you know, Tim Westwood from the British hip hop radio DJ was there, like, doing interviews with people. And it was a very loose environment. There was food. There was a merch table. It was very convivial. You know, if you wanted to say something to Kid Cudi, like, you could basically just walk up to him. There was not a walled off VIP area of any kind. And so that all these people were milling about and congregating inside the barn while all the cameras were focused on the fire. So I think that was probably a tough struggle to be on the wrong side of.
Yes, it required some patience, you know, but this is something that I think we've learned with live streams in general and with Kanye West music rollouts specifically.
Definitely a live stream pandemic.
Yes, the Frank Ocean. I was having flashes of the Frank Ocean staircase, you know, as I was watching. All right. But then, you know, let's get to the music. Kanye eventually makes his way to the fire and he presses play on this album. So we heard it via cell phone or whatever. You heard it via stacks of speakers piled on top of mud. Why don't you do first impressions, and then we could sort of go around and maybe give our general feeling on the album, you know, 3 days in.
I will say that, like, despite the level of ceremony and kind of novelty of being in a location like that, one truism of mine stands, which is I detest listening sessions. Like, I just don't want to listen to a record in the company of several hundred other people, because when I listen to a record, I'm trying to think hard about it. It's a challenge to do that in those kind of environments. So I don't think I was listening with my most critical ear in that moment. What I was struck by right off the top in terms of immediately accessible feelings were some of the lyrics I thought were really stark and really vulnerable, especially stuff about mental health. I could hear that very clearly. Also, the mood of the singing, the choruses, the guest features, which at that point we had no idea really who they were.
And we still don't.
Yes, exactly. Release the credits, please. But I was struck by the kind of melancholic undertow that I was hearing in a lot of those songs. But it was very hard to get a fixed read. I probably didn't get a really solid fixed reading on it until the following morning when I was able to actually like hear a little copy of it.
So we start with this song, you know, I Thought About Killing You, which maybe we should listen to a little bit of that right now.
And I think about killing myself.
So best believe I thought about killing you today.
Premeditated murder.
I called up my loved ones, I called up my cousins, I called up the Muslims, said I'm about to go dumb. Get so bright as no sun, get so loud I hear none. Scream so loud, got no lungs, hurt so bad I go numb. Time to bring in the drums, that put her up a pum. Set a new tone on them, set the nuke off on them. I need coke with no rum, I taste coke on her tongue. I don't joke with no one, they'll say he died so young. I done had a bad case of too many bad days. Got too many bad traits, use the floor for ashtrays. I don't do this halfway, I'ma clear the cachet. I'ma make my name last, put that on my last name. It's a different type of rules that we obey. Yay, 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 season of it, we obey.
So John, so you're hearing these lyrics, you know, about homicide and suicide and mental health and self-love and egomania or whatever it is going on in this sort of mood piece that starts the album. But then you're also seeing Kanye and his friends and, you know, Kid Cudi and co sort of joyously jumping around and celebrating, you know, this music that they seemingly finished maybe hours or minutes before. What was that?
My understanding was that it was personally delivered by Mike Dean. You know, that was what I was told at the event, is that it basically Mike Dean, like, went from the mastering studio straight to the party.
Right. So you're talking about these sort of stark, startling, upsetting in some places lyrics. And but you're also at this joyous event. Like, what was that? What was that like to witness?
I guess I feel like it's important to note that Kanye, even at his most aggrieved or his most internally vulnerable, Kanye wants to make convivial music. He doesn't make difficult, inaccessible music. Even if you listen to Yeezus, which is just riddled with dark themes, it's an industrial party record. And so I think the idea that Kanye would make songs about struggling with mental health and struggling in his marriage and that they wouldn't be somehow energizing feels off to me. Like, of course he made kind of a fun song about those things, or a song that he could turn up to with his friends.
And as this album is playing, you know, so it finishes at, we knew it was going to be seven songs, right? Because all of these Wyoming albums, starting with Pusha T's Daytona, are, you know, alleged to be seven songs long. This one clocks in at, what, like 23, 24 minutes?
Yep.
So it ends. They press play again. What was the feeling on the field?
I mean, you know, it's tough because these are people who, by and large, I don't think have any critical engagement with the record. Like, they're happy to be there, they're celebrating, they want it to be great. But I think people were generally enthused, and I think you saw, especially, I think it was on the second playback when the shake parts, the 070 shake parts came in, and then people, like, basically put her up on their shoulders like it was a bar mitzvah or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, on Ghost Town, which comes later in the record, which I'm sure we'll talk about at length as we go through the track list.
So you really got the sense of collective exuberance. I will also say there was probably a little bit of a sense of relief amongst people who thought, okay, well, we're coming out of a rather challenging Kanye period in the public sphere. What if this album was about that, and what if it was negatively shaped by that?
What if there was a Candace Owens feature, is what you're saying?
I mean, we haven't seen the writing credits. You know, we don't know.
Right.
but yes, I think that was a concern of some people who I spoke to.
So did you exhale at that point when, you know, you realized that there was no Trump necessarily in the foreground of this album?
Right. Nothing overt. I was relieved about that, but I'll tell you what I wasn't relieved about, which is, to me, a lot of the stuff on this record, And I actually, you know, we can talk about the reviews of the record in a little bit, but Ann Powers, I thought in her NPR thing, really nailed what I've been thinking, which is mental health and like personal wellness is really at the forefront of this record.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, even if I was relieved that it wasn't like a MAGA record, I was not relieved that these are the feelings that were so immediate and so at the forefront of his mind that that's what he made an album of.
Right. And also not in any sort of resolved way, right? Like very much these are open concerns.
But that's how he's always worked. I mean, he always right. leaves it open. He does both sides. We're all 16 sides. That's true to form.
Right. JP, so how did you first absorb this album? I imagine you were not up at 1 a.m. watching the live stream.
I wasn't watching the live stream, though I was up at 1 a.m. working on something else.
Okay.
Late night boys.
Yep. I streamed it. The next morning.
Right. So was, again, it didn't become again, available until, you know, on the streaming services until the following morning, Friday morning, you know, it was eventually posted on Spotify. And what were your initial impressions and how did those develop over the weekend as you wrote your review, which was published yesterday online and Monday in the paper?
Well, when you start a hip hop album with kind of a spoken word thing, I got kind of annoyed. The arc of it got me. I mean, it goes from being extremely bummed out, suicidal, you know, self-destructive to pretty reassuring at the end. So it does have this nice upward curve to it. And then I started parsing the lyrics, and then I started getting annoyed at how much of it is about petty feuds from last week. And then stuff like, yikes, you really think he is going into his own pathology and fighting with it. I went back and forth a lot about it. I ended up being disappointed with it musically because every other Kanye album has really banged you over the head with how much new stuff he's doing. And this feels like reruns to me. This is pretty much stuff he's done before rearranged. He's done the gospel stuff before. He's done the synthesizer stuff before. He's even done sort of the big rock buildup of Ghost Town, which works great, but he's done it. I think it gets better toward the end, which is probably why the Wyoming party felt better after the first playback. You realized it was going to resolve and leave you somewhere happy. But I just sort of dug in and did what I do with all Kanye, which is listen and listen and listen. And thank goodness, read lyrics. Thank you, genius.com, yeah. for getting those lyrics up really quickly. And just trying to put it all together.
Now, something that, you know, the experience that I had, which this isn't an advanced thought, I think it happens with a lot of records, but in terms of the replay value, I did feel myself sort of learning the cracks and crevices of this album and the fact that it was so short and lends itself to, you know, you can listen to it basically almost three times in an hour, really lets you digest everything you're hearing. Whereas an album like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, or even Pablo, which has a bit of the roughness, the sloppiness of Ye, is still extremely long. And this, I felt like, even if you didn't like it, it wasn't offensive to have to go through it. And then the more chances you gave it, maybe the more, at least I was able to forgive what I saw as sort of the down moments or the off notes. Did you have that experience?
Yeah, I have two thoughts on that. So first, Joe, as you know, when we spoke yesterday, you know, I drove through Yellowstone National Park and Grand Teton National Park yesterday. So that is a long time in a car with no cell phone service. So what I did for a lot of that time was listen to this album on repeat. And because it's a short album, it repeated quite a few times. And to me, that's actually a recipe for, you say it's a recipe for potentially forgiving flaws. For me, it's a recipe for potentially accentuating flaws.
Mm.
Because if I'm trapped in a car with you and you've done something bad, you've done something wrong on the record, I'm going to change the record. I'm gonna put something else on. I'm gonna fast forward. I'm gonna find a way to not be trapped. And I didn't find that happening with this record. I'm not saying there's no flaws on it. I'm not saying there aren't moments that aren't unpolished. But I began to really feel the emotional arc of the record. And I know when we were talking earlier, I said, you know, to me, like, the lyrics are maybe better than the music on this record. But to me, it's like the feelings are the real thing. And then as expressed through the lyrics, and then as expressed through the music, that's That's how it was affecting me after listening to it a bunch of times. That's one thing. Here's the second thing. It's interesting to go on the internet and see people be like, this is Ye's worst body of work, or put some kind of ranking together and then compare this to Twisted Fantasy or Late Registration or whatnot. And I understand that, like, that's our collective instinct as critics and thinkers and so on and so forth. I understand why we do that. But I also, and this is something I've thought about a lot in the last 6 months, especially if people have started to adapt the structure of their releases to the streaming era. Can you compare, or more to the point, how do you compare a playlist, like a Drake's More Life playlist, with a Take Care? I think they aim to solve different problems. I'm not saying you can't say one is good and one is bad or one is better than the other, but I do think you have to take some context into account. And when I see this record, when I listen to this record, it actually reminded me a lot of when mixtape beefs, or rather when beefs were litigated via mixtape a lot, especially sort of in the 50 and post-50 Cent era, so early to mid-2000s. That felt like news. Like someone would go at someone, and then someone else would make a song and put out a tape and put out crazy artwork with the tape. And it was very of the moment. When I listen to Ye, I hear a record that's extremely of the moment. From what we know, the songs were written, basically, the lyrics, rather, were written just in the days immediately before the release. So what you're hearing is not My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which was worked on for months and months and months in Hawaii, you know, and put together as some kind of like long conceptual piece. You're hearing a rapid response, quick, newsy, you know, album / EP / whatever. And I think that's a different metric. I think the metrics for that might be different than what we think of for a typical Kanye album or an album by any other person.
I guess then it's sort of the question becomes, how much do we trust an artist to guide our thinking on these things? Because, you know, JP and I had a little bit of this conversation over email yesterday where, you know, Kanye is calling this an album. Kanye is calling Ye an album. Am I, you know, by hard rules, maybe it's the length of an EP. And the same goes for Daytona, the Pusha T release from the previous week. But then you think of someone like Drake, where you mention More Life as a playlist. The only person who called it a playlist is Drake and his corporate benefactor, Apple, which, you know, may have had something to gain by framing it that way. And
salute,
I think,
to all our friends at Apple Music.
Yes, we love you on and off. But I think, you know, in this age where the amount of music being put out is not dictated by the hardware, you know, it's not about what can fit on a vinyl or what can fit on a CD. There are really buzzwords, I think, that artists use to sort of talk about expectations, right? So when Drake says, if you're reading this is a mixtape, he means don't count this against my actual albums because I'm just trying out some ideas. Whereas when Kanye says, you know, this might only be 24 minutes, but it's an album, he is saying, to me, put this up against all of my bodies of work. And so that leaves me with this album, you know, a little bit, not, I wouldn't say disappointed, but confused in terms of what his process has become. Because as you say, you know, if, even just listening to the lyrics, not knowing any background info about how it was recorded, there doesn't seem to be any songwriting or lyrics on this project that were done before he started promoting this very project. It's basically all a reaction to what has happened since he rejoined Twitter. So
can I just salt the game a little bit semantically before we go down that road? Something that I think we just have to keep in mind is, and this is like very boring industry, you know, I'm sure Ben Cesario could probably tell you even more about this, but like part of this is contractual, right? Like you are contracted with your record label to put out a certain number of albums. And I know that there are many rappers who put out projects that are on major labels that are not officially deemed albums by their label or by them, partially for contractual reasons. So some of what you may be seeing might be back-channel semantic negotiations.
Sure, great point.
That then force word innovation.
All right.
You know.
Yes.
But every one of these seven-song things that he's putting out is being billed as an album.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying that there's some of what you might be hearing, whether it's in Drake stuff or other hip-hop stuff or even with this Ye stuff, some of it might be legal and semantic.
If we're going to take Kanye's word for this and think of Ye as an album, you know, like we've thought of his previous, seven, not counting Watch the Throne, the arc that I see, right, is maximalist, perfectionist, detail-obsessed Kanye from The College Dropout to My Dark Twisted Fantasy. And I think in a lot of ways, Twisted Fantasy is, you know, the sort of logical culmination of that sound, right? It's widely considered to be his masterpiece. You know,
right.
It tells a narrative front to back. It has so many features, so many layers on every beat, right? And maybe he'd exhausted sort of that route. And then, you know, you get Watch the Throne in between there. And it was funny listening to Ye. I thought a lot about Liftoff, the song with Beyonce and Kanye from Watch the Throne, in which Kanye clearly hasn't finished writing the lyrics of his verse and just starts to, you know, you hear him sort of making sounds, which for anyone who's been in a studio with a rapper in the last decade or decade and a half, this is often how they write, where they lay down, you know, a piece of melody or a flow and then retrofit lyrics on afterwards. So let's just listen to a little bit of Liftoff and then I'll finish my point.
We gonna take
it
to the moon, take it to the
taking my coat off, showing my tattoos, I'm such a show off, huh. I feel the pain and then roll off, I got the whole city, they about to go off, how many thinking of me up in India, how many people wanna roll on me now, like you know me.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
So I think there you hear a little bit of the beginnings of Kanye realizing that he can work in public and that it can be interesting, right? So then, you know, his next full length is Yeezus, which, you know, he's called anti-music, which I think was a reaction to what he accomplished on Twisted Fantasy. And then, to my mind, you get Pablo, which is a little bit of a mix of the two. It's this sort of slapdash.
It's huge and elaborate, but
yeah,
it's also
right. But
really
it's
messy.
Also really messy. Little chunks of songs starting and stopping. Right, then he continues to work on it after it's been uploaded. The vocals change, the features change, tracks get cut in half or like separated. You know, the Frank Ocean interlude, whatever. You know, so. This, to me, is maybe another bridge further in terms of, am I going to finish this song? You get
well,
the...
These are logistical problems, right? You know, the Kanye of fantasy era was not a Kanye who ran a huge apparel and shoe business, you know, who was not married to the most famous, one of the most famous women or the most famous woman in mm-hmm. America mm-hmm. and managing a public life along those lines. That was a Kanye for whom the primary mode of creative output was that record. And who we know, if we know something about Kanye, he is always trying to prove to you and you and you and you that he's a genius. He is always just in full expression mode. And so at that moment in his career, the dominant way for him to do that was through music. So all that energy is channeled into music. I think what you are seeing now is a Kanye who has 10 different directions to put that energy in, and therefore the records that we're hearing, Yeezus, Pablo, Ye, are more.
Are you saying he's too busy to make an album?
I'm saying he's making albums that are reflective of his busyness.
Right.
This is attention deficit disorder, period.
I think that's definitely true. So, you know, I mentioned Liftoff because you'll hear little bits of that in this too, like in the final verse on the first song, I Thought About Killing You. You know, he's sort of doing the I don't see no yet, like, you know, filling in sort of nonsense words. There are places where it seems like maybe he forgot to put the auto-tune on. Like, that may have been the final step in the process. I actually like, you know, that you hear a little Kanye singing on this album without auto-tune, because I think it's extremely vulnerable, where he's always coded his vulnerability in this sort of digital, in electronics. But, you know, there are parts of this album, I think, that sound more unfinished than, say, Quentin Miller's Drake reference tracks, you know, if I had to call it. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So
wait, as always, Quentin Miller, DM us.
Yes. So, JP, I don't know, what did you make of the rough edges on this project?
Rough edges are fine with me. I mean, if something's too polished, auto-tuned, laminated. I mean, he's been making rough noises since Yeezus. So that didn't bother me. What annoyed me is that a lot of the songs start out being from the heart, being vulnerable, being really exposed and getting to something, and they end up in this kind of defensive crouch where he's going back to beefing. So to me, it's like the first couple of verses he really worked on, and the rest, he had a deadline.
John, what did you find to be?
Wait. Who among us?
Has not fudged a sentence because of a deadline?
Yeah. You know, I just to add one thing to that, like, and I think I said this, alluded to this before when I was talking about my initial impressions of the record, like, but I think it bears repeating, especially in 2018, especially after, 15 years of Kanye West in the public eye. Kanye is a feeling. He is a feeling more than a set of words, or, you know, he represents something that is misty and in the air and kind of ubiquitous to a lot of people. And so if I hear him, you know, mumbling his way through a line, I don't think of it as a lack of lyrical acuity. I think of it as, if the feeling is communicated by the mumble, then that suffices. Because think of how many rappers we love who rap their asses off and don't communicate any feeling.
Yes, it is. It is true. In reading a lot of the reviews that have come out thus far, I get the sense that people are disappointed that there are no answers here, right? That this this rollout, which included, you know, Kanye expressing his affinity for Donald Trump and other right-wing thinkers, the notorious at this point slavery, that sounds like a choice, comments on TMZ, you know, his sort of discursions on mental health and medication and how much he does or does not take his pills, all these various threads that I think people wanted either wanted him confirmed as now a quote unquote alt-right troll. They wanted him to own that, it almost seems, or they wanted him to say, that's not me. I'm still the crack music guy. I'm still the child of radicals from Chicago, and I haven't let you down. And instead, what you get is you get him celebrating basically that he's still able to rile people up. You get him saying, look at the mess I made. Here's more of that mess. And I thought, you know, there's one line that stuck out to me where he says, I got the same attitude that done got us here. And he's basically saying, anyone who thinks that this is a different yay hasn't really been paying attention, because I've always been playing the same game. Did you feel any sense of resolution, John, from this album based on what happened in the previous weeks, or were you not even looking for that?
I was prepared for it and curious about it. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't want it a little bit, because, you know, Ye is a provocateur and Ye is a manipulation seems like the wrong word, because it seems to have some kind of a negative, kind of like devious connotation. Like, you know, he's like almost like an experimenter sometimes with like throwing ideas in the world. It's not always healthy and it doesn't always land in a good place, but it is a thing that he has done consistently through his career. So I guess I should be honest and say part of me was hoping that would continue on this record, even if I ended up hating it, even if I thought it was wrong. But the fact that he ended up turning internal on this record, I found meaningful. Because when you see Ye spazzing in public, when you see Ye push the Ye button, he's not doing it generally about what's going on in his life. He's doing it about like a bigger idea or something that's like broad. But the fact that when he took the time to put the words on record, that they were about what's going on in his head and his heart, that to me, I thought was meaningful and powerful.
Let me take the other side of this, which is to say he stirred up all these big socio-political historical ideas, and then he ends up saying, oh, my wife still loves me. I mean, it's like you throw all this mud in the air, and when it lands, it's just like all about whether he's still married. It seems like a retreat. It's like all that matters is my personal life, and, you know, I can blather on about slavery, but all that really matters is, you know, my wife puts up with me.
But also my business, right? Like, will our business be intact, and will women still want to sleep with me? Other women, including and not including my wife.
Should we listen to Wouldn't Leave?
Man, I know you wouldn't leave. Oh, don't bring that up. That's gonna get me sentimental. You know I'm sensitive. I got a gentle mental. Every time something happened, they want me sentimental. We had an incident, but I cover incidentals. You want me working on my messaging. When I'm thinking like George Jetson, but sounding like George Jefferson. Then they questioning my methods in. If you tweaking out on my text again, then I don't get reception here. I got the mind state to take us past the stratosphere. I use the same attitude that didn't get us here. I live for now, I don't know what happened after here. I live for now, I don't know what happened after here. Plus, what was meant to be was meant to be. Even if publicly I lack the empathy, I ain't finna talk about it another four centuries. One and one is two, but me and you, that's infinity.
I don't feel like she's mine enough.
So to that point, Joe, about him being kind of transparent almost about the behind-the-scenes stuff or about what's on his head, you know, we just listened to, he says, you know, I'm sensitive, I got a gentimental. Every time something happened, they want me sentimental. You know, we forget that this man had a breakdown not that long ago. This is, you know, a year and change ago. And
John, we haven't forgotten.
Yeah, we have not forgotten.
We've
some people
reminded.
May have forgotten.
Yes, but the frame, like, to listen to this album without that as a framework, as much as what came in the wake of that and his potential heavy medication in the wake of that, like, it's so weird to hear people talk about the rollout of this album, because I really think what the rollout of the album is someone kind of returning back to some sense of public life, microscope life, after a sort of challenging and possibly horrific personal event. And I'm often surprised at how little sympathy there is in the world for that.
I'm just thinking, I just keep hearing Karen Gans's voice in my head.
Oh, yeah, we got to read
so
Karen's email.
Karen is currently having an early bird supper in Florida right now. She was not able to join us on this podcast, but wouldn't be a New York Times pop team roundtable for a major release without some thoughts from Karen. So she did email us a little bit of what she was thinking.
We should just release the text.
Yeah, honestly.
When they do the credits.
Yeah, someone should FOIA all of Karen's text messages to John and I over the past weekend. But I'm just going to read a little bit from an email she sent us, which begins saying that she dislikes the album and that it is irking her.
You don't want that Gans smoke.
Yeah.
You don't want it.
All right. Karen says, I don't think you can separate the rollout from the product. It's all Kanye, and the rollout was problematic. She says she believes there are many musicians who are bipolar and make interesting art, whereas this seems a little sophomoric, ill-considered, not innovative, not as raw or as interesting as it could have been. She thinks it's a retread, both lyrically and musically, and this is a direct quote. "This feels like the final paper I used to turn in for classes in college when I was just too busy running around being an idiot to do the assignment properly. It's so cast off, half-baked, faux deep, it's designed to make me angry." which I think is a valid read, you know, and I think that there...
And a valid read.
Yes, in both senses of the word. And I think, you know, we're approaching this with some distance, and we are trying to, I think, be even keeled and digest this complicated piece of work, again, in all senses of the words. But I think we can't discount that there is a huge portion of Kanye's fan base who has just been put off by his behavior and now his music in recent weeks and months. And
yeah, I mean, Kanye was... just some people, you know, and again, I think like when we talk about people being canceled, like I think 5 to 10 years from now, we'll look back at this particular moment and be like, that was a narrow way to talk about things. Mm-hmm. Like I think the language and the ideologies will evolve. But, you know, for a decent set of people, a decent set of the fan base, Kanye sort of canceled himself in the last 6 weeks. I was going to say the last 6 months, but really the last 6 weeks, which is, you know, considering that Kanye is like, perhaps the most transformative musician of the 21st century. Like, that's not insignificant that happened.
Totally. And one thing that I've been trying to do is take a little bit of the long view. You know, we're so immersed in our artists now, right? We're reading them on Twitter. We're seeing them on Instagram in paparazzi photos. You know, they can drop a song any moment on SoundCloud that's from the album, that's not from the album. It's just so, it's the news cycle for a musician is so intense as it is, you know, in politics or whatever it may be, that I try to remember, like, you know, what must it have been like, JP, I'm looking at you, to follow the careers of, you know, a Bob Dylan, a John Lennon, a Michael Jackson, these people who are in our lives, you know, for decades.
It was so nice of them to be silent once in a while.
Right. But they had down periods, and they had times when you're like, they've totally lost it. They've gone off the rails. And for us, you know, that might be a paragraph on the Wikipedia or a couple chapters in the biography. But for fans going through it at the time, presumably there were these moments of despair when you're looking at your great artists and they seem to be letting you down.
Well, the thing is, when you look at a long career, there are ups and downs. There's nobody who is consistently great and wonderful. You know, Bob Dylan went through his Christian period, which alienated a whole lot of people. Neil Young has so many throwaway albums, which don't obviate the great ones he made. Nobody's good all the time. So I do keep that in mind with this, but I mean, for him to make this slight little 23-minute thing and call it an album and do the whole like international rollout, it does seem like it's definitely a dip. It is not going to stand against My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. It's not going to stand against The College Dropout. It's just not. It's a stunt album. It's like, I can do this in however many days he left himself. I can do this and I can tweet, and I can do, you know, wild interviews.
Yeah.
Hey, John, are you back?
Yeah, sorry, you guys lost me there. The cordless handset on my hotel phone died, but I'm on the cell. I'm going to keep that same energy. Let's go.
Yes. As you were being hung up on, John, yes, Pareles was saying that this is a bit of a stunt album in his estimation. And I think something maybe that we can all agree on is that what is not a stunt is Ghost Town, or at least the 070 Shake part of Ghost Town, which I think we should play a little bit of before
we
go.
Let's do that.
I've been trying to make you love me, but everything I try just takes you further from me.
Whoa, once again I am a child. I let go of everything that I know.
We're still the kids we used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I put my hand on a stove to see if I still bleed.
Yeah,
and nothing hurts anymore. I feel kind of free. We're still the kids we used to be.
Okay, so Ghost Town is Beautiful Fantasy. You know, like, it's that era.
Without the polish.
Yes. Maybe with, like, a touch of the Pablo kind of, like, framing, you know? Ghost Town is a lot of people's favorite song. It's probably not my favorite song, but it is a lot of people's favorite song on this record. And I think it is because it accesses older ideas of Kanye West. Right? It shows what he's good at as a producer. We haven't really talked about the music on this record, what he's good at as a producer, which is bringing a lot of disparate parts and pieces and ideas into one coherent whole that's pretty much unmistakably Ye.
Mm-hmm.
And on this record, the song that does that the most effectively is Ghost Town.
And how do you think that compares to the music in other parts of this album?
To me, I feel like I'm hearing a lot of ideas on this record, and I'm hearing things that are familiar from older Kanye projects. I mean, I think you must have seen the Justin Charity one-liner in the Ringer Roundup, where he's basically like, every song on Ye is basically just like a budget version of an older Kanye song.
Though he did also say that Ghost Town was a budget version of Some Nights by Fun, and I'm not going to have
that. Yeah, yeah. We don't acknowledge that.
Though they do share collaborators, and it's on, and we have on the record that Kanye is a big fan of that Fun album, but we don't have to get into this right now. This is for another time.
That's a dark period. Dark reference, dark period. You know, I am as interested in the music on No Mistakes. I'm interested in the sample choices throughout this record. To me, Ghost Town is the most Kanye, in quotes, but I don't know if it's the best. I think hearing Yikes, I think Yikes is really effective. You know, we learned that Yikes, the hook is written by Drake. LOL.
so it's not the most Kanye.
Right, which is both a loaded fact and also one that just makes a lot of sense given just how sturdy this hook is.
Well, given how much once you realize it's Drake, it sounds like Drake. I mean, it's those punchy syllables. But let's go back to Ghost Town for a sec. First of all, big shout out to Vanilla Fudge.
Yes, that organ sound.
The organ sound, the guitar sound.
A podcast first. Should we play the original Vanilla Fudge song that it came from?
Let's hear a little bit of it.
Which provides the chorus.
I've been trying to make you love me, but everything I try just takes you further from me.
Vanilla Fudge, for those of you younger than me, was a late 60s band whose trick was to slow things down and pump them up. So they did a version of You Keep Me Hanging On by the Supremes that feels like it lasts for about an hour, and it's so dramatic, and it's got such great fuzz tone in it. And this is that
chopped
same.
And screwed. They were chopped and screwed of the 60s.
Right. So you get some of that drama in this sort of hook and outro by 070 Shake.
Well, but also 070 Shake, I mean, the Fun connection is she's his lord.
Mm-hmm.
She's definitely being the bummed out, smart woman, you know, asserting herself at the end of the song. She blows him away.
Yeah, and I think you can say that about a lot of the features on this album. Again, we don't have official credits for all of them, but I do know, you know, that Ty Dolla $ign and Jeremih are all over
this thing.
Specifically the Jeremih hook on All Mine, which I think is pretty great. And then Wouldn't Leave, which follows it, has, you know, what's rumored to be a vocal hook by Party Next Door, although that I have not confirmed personally, and you get a little more Ty Dolla Sign in there. And I don't know, I just think Kanye has always been good at this, right? Like, I can never forget basically Chief Keef on Hold My Liquor, which is just such an amazing use of a young talent and sort of framing him in a way that you never would have thought. And, you know, that's always been one of Kanye's strengths. So I think it's not a surprise that in a lot of ways the features on this album are more striking than the Kanye vocals.
Yeah, people are his instruments, right? Like, in the same way that like a producer goes in and tell some guy to play sax and some guy to play guitar. Like, and Ye is like, you know, I need this particular part of what Ty Dolla Sign.
Let's put it a different way, which is that he uses everything as a sample.
Right. That's another great way to put it. Yeah. And I mean just taking people and putting them in contexts where you might not expect them, you know, Post Malone on Pablo is another example. You know, you never quite heard him like you heard him on Fade.
Also, I want to pick up on one idea that JP just touched on, and that was also in his review, which is this record also gets really good when female perspectives are incorporated. And that is something that I've seen talked about a little bit online, and it's not always been something that Ye has done. But I think you hear the strength that comes out of that on this album.
Well, that sort of brings us to Violent Crimes, which is the last song on the album, and which I think, despite the Russell Simmons Me Too lines, despite the sort of allusions to slavery and his comments about slavery, I feel like Violent Crimes has really taken the title in the first few days, at least, as the most controversial song on this album. So let's listen to a little bit of it, and then we can dive in.
Ziggin' the savage, ziggin' monsters, ziggin' the pimps, ziggin' the players, 10 ziggin' the daughters. Now they precautious, Father forgive me, I'm scared of the karma. Cause now I see women as something to nurture, not something to conquer. I hope she like Nicki, I'll make her a monster. Now having menages, I'm just being silly. I answer the door like Will Smith and Martin. Again, do we have a problem? Matter of fact, Marlon, this ain't me the Farkas. I beat his ass, pray I beat the charges. No, daddy don't play, not when it comes to their daughters. Don't do no yoga, don't do Pilates. Just play piano and stick to karate. I pray your bodies drink more like mine and not like your mommy's. Just being salty, but niggas is nuts. And I am a noggin, know what they want. I pray that you don't get it all at once. Curves under your dress, I know it's pervs. All on the net, all in the comments. You wanna vomit, that's your baby, you love her to death. Now she.
So JP, you closed your review on a paragraph about this song in particular, and I feel like you found it to be somewhat effective emotionally, in which Kanye is talking about how he does and does not want his daughter to grow up.
Yeah, I did find it effective. It's not a new idea. John Mayer, fathers be good to your daughters, right? It's not the most original construction, but you do see Kanye West sitting at the door with a shotgun ready to fend off his daughter's nasty suitors when they do arrive.
Yo, imagine Ye is your father-in-law.
Just a horrifying image, which he really illustrates on this song.
There's a reality show in this, too. But I do find the song, I mean, he's grappling. He's thinking, you know, until I had a daughter, I didn't really realize how men treated women, how badly men treated women. And he does have that line about, now I see women as something to nurture, not something to conquer. I think that's a good line.
Right.
But it's a kind of a late realization,
sure,
given he's married. But
so at the same time, you know, people, this has become sort of a meme online as a father of daughters, pre-Ye, but this idea that basically men were blind to the humanity of women despite their mothers, their sisters, their friends, their, you know, and they're just their, a lack of basic humanity.
But on the other hand, you can see him fighting with it.
Right.
You can see him grappling with it.
He's certainly grappling.
It does feel relatively unguarded. And the stuff about yoga and Pilates, I just don't get.
JC, what was your read on this one?
I agree, generally speaking, that the emotional content revealed in this song should not be a newsflash to anyone. But if it is, in fact, a newsflash to him, I'm glad he's talking about it, you know? The emotion in the voice, I think, is real. I feel like it's coming from a true place, a place of actual engagement with the idea. And men waking up to the humanity of women because they have daughters is like a horrible thing. It's like, that's not how we want to be existing in the world as men in 2018. But if this is like one of the bumps that we got to get over in order to get to the part where that's like the ubiquitous feeling, then okay. Then like, let's get over it and get to the other side.
Let us point out that this track arrives how many tracks after All Mine?
But this is, that's part of Ye too. I mean, this is, Ye is not one specific ideology. He is a feeling. He is a mood. And like sometimes, Joe, you remember we were texting with Karen and she brings up the Frito-Lay line.
Yes.
Which is like obviously a bad lyric.
Yeah, there are no shortage of clunkers on this album, but I think there's no shortage of clunkers in Kanye's career.
And I think that's in a way that Kanye's like imperfect approach to rapping is part of what is endearing. If he was like too perfect or too technical, you wouldn't get the humanity of it.
Sure.
And I think that
the mispronounced Kanye lyric is also a classic, thing that we get again here when he says Amber Crombie. It's just,
yes.
He's got a career full of those.
And again, I do think that is all, it's part and parcel of who his persona is. And to ask him in 2018 to basically be like, don't do that anymore, I don't think that's going to get very far.
Right. I will actually, I'll undermine myself a little bit here and say that I think this song is the clearest example of something that Kanye has been working on for a long time and thinking about, because actually just last weekend before this album came out, the week before this album came out, I was rewatching his 2015 interview on The Breakfast Club. Shout out
yep.
to Carrie, who was playing this when I got home. And she has, my girlfriend, who is also a music writer, has always been fixated on this part of this specific interview where he's discussing the very things that are in the lyrics of this song. And he's saying that he assumes his daughter is going to grow up with the body of her mother and that it's his job to make that the ideal beauty standard because he wants his daughter to fit in the future. So
oh, wow.
These are obviously ideas that he's been wrestling with, and he both wants her to be wanted, but also wants her to be safe from, frankly, men like him. So it's, it's certainly complicated. And
also, I want to point out in this song, the music does the job.
Right.
And this song gives you the feeling that even though he's all over the place, fighting himself, being proud of himself for finally noticing that women are people, but the music is this big gospel buildup, and the music tells you everything's going to be all right.
That evolution from I want to change the beauty standard because beauty is something that's like in service of the male gaze and in service of men's needs to men are terrors and I want to protect my daughter from them. Like, I think we can all agree that that's the right direction to be moving in.
Sure. If yeah. a bit slow, if it took him 3 years yeah. to get there, but yes.
One more thing that I wanted to touch on before we're done today is Daytona, the Pusha T record. So Kanye from these Wyoming sessions is releasing 5 albums. Allegedly. I mean, we'll see. But that's the plan. The first one was with Daytona, the Pusha T album. Second one is Ye. Third one coming this Friday, again, allegedly, is the Kanye and Kid Cudi record as Kids See Ghosts. After that, Nas. After that, Teyana Taylor. I can't speak to strategic thinking or rollout ideas. I'm sure that there is some happenstance in terms of what's coming out when. But I will say that there was a stroke of brilliance, intended or otherwise, by putting out Daytona first. Daytona is wholly produced by Kanye West. There are additional production credits, but in the main, it is produced by Kanye West. It is a very strong album. Pusha is not someone who mumbles his way through his lines. He is not that kind of rapper. And Kanye gave him some of that old vintage chopped up sample, like slow, greasy, spunky, but also with a hard boom bap. Those are Kanye beats that people who love Kanye, or loved in some cases Kanye, feel very strongly about and access in a very personal and intense way. And I think coming with that first before Ye actually helps set the table for Ye, because it's coming back in this kind of unambiguously good way. Now, there is the verse, the Kanye verse on What Would Meek Do, and we can listen to that a little bit. But I do think the main Kanye takeaway from Daytona is that that version of Kanye that people feel strongly about is still part of him. And the fact that that is the first real musical statement that he came back with, accepting like Poopity Scoop and T.I., T.I. First the People or whatever it is, Yay First the People. But the idea that that was really the first potent musical statement that people could reacquaint themselves through Kanye, with Kanye through, I think that helps. And it helps clear the path for Yay, even if people ultimately dislike or dismiss Yay. If Yay had come first, I think it may have been received even more harshly.
Talking sh, Yay, how do you respond?
Whoop, scoop, whoop, whoopie whoop. Am I too complex for complex con? Everything Ye say cause a new debate. You see, he been out of touch, he cannot relate. His hard way too long, too bad. Got a surrogate, his kid, get two dads. I be thinking, what would Tupac do? You be thinking, what new kids on the block do? If you ain't driving wild black, do they stop you? Well, MAGA hats let me slide like a drive-thru. That phone call from Ricky still hazy. When heaven got an angel named Avery, you gotta watch who you calling crazy. Yeezy, the newest billion-dollar baby. It won't feel right till I feel like Phil Knight. Going for six rings like what Phil told Mike. Seven pill nights, who know what that feel like? No more hiding the scars, I show them like Seal, right? How do you respond?
So as we're wrapping up here, I just want to throw out a few stray thoughts. I think a real low light of this album is Kanye comparing Tristan Thompson to Kobe Bryant. I think
that's for NBA Twitter.
Yeah, this is for NBA Twitter. I think, you know, in terms of their infidelity, sure, I have nothing to say about that. But in terms of comparing the athletic ability, just proves that Kanye West is not the most not the most ardent sports fan in the world. But on the other hand, I just wanted to shout out Kid Cudi's perhaps missed note and pronunciation of the word try on Ghost Town, which I think is just those are the two little things that haven't left my head this weekend of listening to this album. I wanted to know if you guys have any highlights or lowlights from this journey that we've been on. JP, you have anything left to say about this album?
I just want to praise Kanye as the sampler, as the sample grabber. There's a wonderful sample at the beginning of Ghost Town from Shirley Ann Lee, gospel singer that he found probably on a reissue. But it's just a wonderful little snippet. And All Mine, which is the most Neanderthal, dopey, sexist, trivial song on the album, there's a very snappy rhythmic thing they do in the chorus. I think when Kanye is just letting his ear do the work, he can still do amazing things.
And John Caramonica, from the great outdoors, from the far west. I don't even know what we call this part of the country, to be honest. I've never been there.
I'm on mountain time, God.
There you go. Any stray thoughts or sort of closing ideas from your time in the belly of the beast?
Well, yes. Okay, so I want to talk quickly. There are three little things on the record I want to talk about, and then I want to conclude with some more narrative. Okay, the first is, as far as I thought about Killing You goes, we don't know who that song's about, or if in so much as it's about a person, right? Like, is it about him killing his alter ego? Is it about someone intimate in his life, someone he loves, his wife? Is it about, maybe it's about Drake or some other foe? If it is, in fact, about Drake, which who knows, maybe it is, maybe it's not. But if it was, what an LOL that it's immediately followed by a song in which the hook is written by Drake.
Right. It never even crossed my mind that he could feel so strongly about Drake that he would start his album with a spoken word about wanting to kill him. For some reason, my mind went to darker places. My mind went to domestic violence and anger,
self-destruction.
I couldn't help but think a little bit of OJ, given the Kardashian connections there. But your reading is much more of the moment, I guess.
Yes, it occurred to me to read it that way largely because of the immediacy of the work on the record and because of what was going on during those days. You know, that's one. But that's a hypothesis. I don't have a hard answer on that. The second thing is, a thing that Kanye likes to do, And I think Drake likes to do it as well, but Drake is, I think, a lot more mercenary about it. But Kanye likes to let you know that he knows what's going on. And he's either participating in it in some sort of tangential way, some sidelong way, or that he fathered it. Whereas Drake, say, for example, you look at the SoundCloud rap generation, you know, Drake will borrow those flows, like, quite mercilessly, and incorporate them into his own music. Kanye will not do that, but there is a line on, it's on Yikes, I think, where he says, I turn the clout game up a notch.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and the clout, you know, clout is basically sort of, you know, just lingua franca online. Like, that's a term that is not the Ye generation. That's a term that's the X and Smoke Burp and Pump generation.
Right, it's a SoundCloud term.
Yes. So I thought it was interesting that he at least nodded to that. And also, when I saw a bison on the road in Yellowstone yesterday, that is what I captured the Instagram post.
You got your clout game up a notch.
I did. And here is the third thing. Just from a purely musical perspective, we talked about Kanye singing and how important it is to hear him singing without processing or with minimal processing. There is a line on Ghost Town where he says, sometimes I take all the shine. And then I forget if he's singing that line, but then he sings the next line, which is like, talk like I drank all the wine.
Right.
But the way that the melody goes on that, I thought was so damp and so just, it just got me. It just kicked me in the chest every time I heard it. And I heard that and I was like, I felt really connected to the man's feelings in that moment.
See, that line was undermined for me a little bit this weekend, and I would say ruined, and I hate to do this to you, but by a friend pointing out that it sounded like an Instagram caption or a Twitter lingo thing, like drinking all the wine. I want all the wine. So that made me cringe a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, tell your friends to get off the internet. Yeah. I'm out here in the mountains, dog.
Right.
Don't come get with me out in the mountains.
So speaking of the mountains, why don't you lead us home with another scene from Wyoming?
Okay, so we did not talk about the after party. And this was, I don't think this was a planned thing. My sense is it was fairly impromptu. But one of the things that happened is everybody was bussed to this location and then subsequently bussed back to, you know, to civilization. And so people started saying, we're going to gather at the Cowboy Bar. The Million Dollar Cowboy Bar is basically the bar in the center of Jackson, Wyoming's downtown, which is, you know, not a huge downtown. You know, we're talking 8 square blocks or 12 square blocks. It's not that big. And this is sort of like a turned up honky tonk. It's on steroids. A lot of taxidermy around. I would like to acknowledge one insult I received on Twitter from a Wyoming local who, after reading my piece, said, quote, a cringeworthy outsider's perspective of Wyoming, where race matters around the campfire and hicks look to beat up outsiders in the honky-tonk. Wyoming is a place where people don't care what brand satchel you wear on the dance floor, Mr. Caramonica. And to that I say, I have never seen a Goyard satchel on the dance floor. So, and neither have you, sir.
Wow.
So, yes, the Cowboy Bar party was interesting, because people sort of arrived in waves. They were arriving on the buses, and the buses were sort of staggered. So the people who showed up early are sort of sitting around, milling around, you know, having drinks. It's pretty low-key. But none of the artists were there at that point. I think I was on one of the first buses that ended up at the bar. Then a bus or buses with Tiana, Lil Yachty, Designer, shouts to Partisan Fontaine. Party was in the building. They all showed up, and there was a bit of a stare off. I likened it to the Blake Shelton Boys Around Here video. There was a little bit of a stare off, and now people have pointed out Jackson Hole is a liberal bastion, the center of the conservative state, et cetera, et cetera. I get it, but I do think also that when you are used to having your local bar, when a bunch of randos show up in your local bar, wherever the local is and whoever the randos are, there's always going to be a little bit of stare off.
Right, and if they're famous rappers, there's a whole other layer of tension there.
Yes. So the next group of people came in, and there was a little bit of a, everybody sucking each other out. The bluegrass band was playing. And then at some point, I could just tell, like, all the younger of the kids, and by young kids, I mean Yachty and Tiana and Designer, also, like, Bloody Osiris, like, all these guys, just run onto the dance floor. Yachty was doing the shoot dance and Tiana was Millie rocking, but Designer was trying to do like some country dancing, and it was just nuts. And I was very, very privileged to be there. And anyone who was following my IG stories that night, I hope enjoyed what I was able to put out into the world. It was very, very special. And it really, to end that adventure with that kind of almost healing moment, it felt profound to me. And I was really, really grateful to have been a part of it.
Make no mistake, girl, I still love you. I think we can only go out with a little Uncle Charlie Wilson and No Mistakes to hopefully end on a note of harmony.
Believe it or not.
Make no mistake, girl, I still love you. Make no mistake, girl, I still love you.
Thank you for listening to the New York Times Popcast. You can listen to every popcast of all time at nytimes.com/popcast. You can subscribe.
Keep that same energy.
Yes, keep that same energy. Subscribe to the Popcast, Spotify, iTunes Pod, Stitcher, wherever you get your audio content. Email us your thoughts on Ye, your thoughts on 070 Shake, your thoughts on being the father of a daughter at popcast@nytimes.com. Our producer is Pedro Rosado of Headstepper Media, and thank you to my guests, John Caramonica and John Perellis, critics extraordinaire at the New York Times, and we will be back next week.
Turn the snubs off. Plus, they are already mad that the Cubs lost. These two wrongs are right, you. I was too grown in high school. The true soul of Ice Cube, too close to snipe you. Truth told, I like you. Too bold to type you. Too rich to fight you. Calm down, you light skin.
Make no mistake, girl, I still love you. Make no mistake, girl, I still love you.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.